WNST, Towson Baltimore. And Baltimore Positive, we are positively celebrating 25 years of this mess we call WNST and Baltimore Positive. We're Drug City. It says so on the wall. We got the sign to light up. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We're letting ourselves play 50 years strong. We're giving these away. Had some winners. I had a $2 winner. Mr. Statham won $2 at Costas on Thursday. We're now Drug City. We're going to begin this journey of day two. Lots and lots of folks are stopping by today, including Baltimore County Executive Johnny O. Andy Mueller is here. And yeah, Andy, I'm not going to make you wear the fun Window Nation hat. I'll be wearing the floppy hat throughout this thing. And I didn't get my crab claw working yesterday from Raskin Global over at Costas. But when I said to you, do you want to come to Costas or do you want to come to Drug City? You had something like, what is Drug City? And I'm like, when someone says to me, what is Drug City? Then I know you need to come to Drug City.
Yeah. And, you know, when I got here today, I walk in and obviously it's a large store with pretty much everything on the planet.
If, the motto here is, if we don't have it,
right,
you don't need it.
Right.
Right. So.
Right. So, and they pretty much have everything here. But then as I explored the place, I went over and asked Chuck to come, you know, where's Nestor? He's upstairs in the tasting room, which is where we are right
it's
now.
It's tasty in here. You must have.
Yeah. Oh, my God. What a room. This is unbelievable.
How many whiskeys we got over here? 15, 20?
Oh, at least. Yeah.
And then we got the expensive bottles back here and some Taylor back in the corner. And yeah.
Oh, yeah. I could spend about a year and a half in here just enjoying myself. I mean, there's a lot to taste.
You like whiskey.
Oh, yeah. You betcha.
Now, Andy, for those of you unfamiliar, and, you know, part of this 25-year thing is, like, I haven't seen Mona, your wife, in a long time. I remember your beautiful wedding right before my wedding 20 years ago. You got married 20 years ago in May.
Yep.
Skinny Atlas. Is that how did I pronounce
well,
it right?
Yeah, that's Skinny Atlas. Yeah,
Skinny
the lake right
Atlas,
there.
I
yeah,
say it
up,
right.
Up outside of Syracuse, yeah.
My wife and I took a beautiful picture at your wedding. You were my producer at the time, 2003, and it's hung on our bedroom wall. It's the two of us. A couple of months before we got married, we just met. Wildly in love, my wife and I. She had this beautiful dress that I got her in Vegas, and that's adorned my wall from your wedding.
Oh, very nice.
Yes, it has the lighting from Syracuse and upstate New York and beautiful springtime.
Yeah, we had a lot of people at that wedding, obviously, from our entire life, you know, not just people we, you know, grew up with or family. We had people, you know, that someone I knew maybe when I was 10 years old to someone who, you know, I had just
well,
started
like
working
bookie,
with or whatever.
You can't get rid of me 20 years later.
Yeah, no, and it's great. It was a great wedding. And I remember, I think you actually were in a car because it wasn't near where everyone was staying. It was a good 20, 30 minutes away at least. And I think you hopped in a car with some neighbors of Mona's growing up or something like that on the way out.
Man,
or whatever.
Man, you got a memory that I
yeah,
have
was,
no, I don't remember this at all.
It just, it was an
driving,
odd melding
I remember
people.
Driving to Skinny Atlas. Maybe I drove with them because we were going to drink or something, but
right.
I remember driving with my wife from New Hampshire to your wedding,
oh,
like
okay.
across Vermont, you know,
yeah.
across Massachusetts, Springfield. We went to Springfield, went to the basketball hall. I mean, you had the Boxing Hall of Fame. So I did
Soda.
A little
yep.
bit of that going through upstate New York.
Yep.
So that's the way I did. It was 20 years ago. Andy was our executive producer in the turn of the century. I mean, I don't, 6 years, seven, how long were you with me? It was something like
no,
that.
it was about 2.5.
What?
It was only 2.5. Yeah, so. When, yeah, and
you participated in some really
well, a lot was going on then.
Key points of our
well, there was a big thing called the Super Bowl with the Ravens. Obviously, the first time
that's right.
Through.
You're in all those pictures with Stacey
yeah.
Keibler.
Oh, yeah.
And Bobby
oh, yeah.
Nick.
Yep. There was a. I mean, I'm a guy from Syracuse, New York. Grew up there. Went to college there. And was working at a radio station up there. TV
He's a real Yankee fan.
Yes.
The last place Yankees? Is that still correct?
Yeah, still. That's still
right,
the case.
Just making sure.
But you never know. Maybe after tonight they won't
but,
be because they've won two in a row.
I've known you 25 years.
Yep.
Right. Like literally right. 25 years.
Yep.
And have the Yankees ever been in last place? Have I ever been able to go on the airwaves here? The Yankees, I mean, maybe the second day of the season
well,
if they're 0-1 or something.
Right.
I mean, like, no, that's never been the case.
No, it hasn't.
Because the Orioles have existed.
Not in that time. No, that's true. Exactly. And let me just say this about Orioles fans. And I'm not saying that the way they treat Yankee fans. I have no problem with that because there are a lot of Yankee fans that really are jerks, period, straight up. And I get that. I'm not one of them. I'm actually a pretty nice Yankee fan. You know, I grew
we
up with the team.
We knew that about you on the air.
And I never,
dude,
you know,
were on the radio right after, like,
oh,
Jeffrey
yeah.
Mayer and stuff here.
Yeah.
So, like,
oh, yeah.
being a Yankee fan here at the turn of the century, they wouldn't let you in loonies.
Right.
you know, treat you like Chad Steele treats
me.
Yeah,
I had to kind of, I had to kind of act like, I was a fan of the team, the Orioles, and I am a fan of them to a degree, but clearly they're a division.
Well, things
rival.
Got all screwed up when Messina signed up there, right?
I mean, I loved it. I don't think anyone down here did, but. But yeah, you know, the Oriole fans are just not nice to me now. Like my friends that are Oriole fans in the area here, they're just, oh, you're last place. I mean, I'm getting texts constantly.
Well, I've already
I'm getting
it
all
to
these
you.
Things. Yeah. Yeah, and you know,
and I mean, I consider you a friend, but you're
a
Yankee fan.
I get it. You know,
what do you want me to do?
You're in first place, and I hope you stay there. I hope this is the year. I would hope it's in the next 3 years because I'm still. That's what I would say about.
Well,
the
you
Orioles.
Want to see a parade here at some point, right?
I would, and I just once these.
I mean,
young,
you're a
New York
Rangers
guys,
fan. I mean, everybody that suffers wants to like let it go once, right?
Right. Yeah,
just,
at least
just once.
Just once, yeah.
I mean, they even let the Eagles win once.
Yeah, if the Yankees,
the Flyers, would never want them to win.
I mean, if the Yankees get back in it somehow and are actually a playoff team, which is still possible. And they do have to play the Orioles. I mean, I'm going to have to obviously root the one direction. But if the Yankees don't make the playoffs or when they're out, then yeah, I'll go.
Well, if the Orioles can win a World Series before the Browns win a Super Bowl, that would
Well, it sure looks like
nice.
They will.
That would
it
be
sure
nice.
Looks like they will. But no, I hope they sign. I hope they can get one in the next couple of years because then now you have to sign all these young players. And you saw Machado and whatnot, and will this team change?
We almost saw Lamar, right, in
right,
football.
Right, we almost saw Lamar.
When
so.
when you get into the crosshairs of negotiating, I mean, look at what Shohei Ohtani is going to go through in Anaheim right now. Like, once you get to the end of that window, the closer you get. And I'm not a guy that thinks they should give Gunnar Henderson $100 million tomorrow, Adley Rutschman, but I think they need to be thinking about that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And that's sooner than later. Is buying out a 2 years of their deal or something like that at $30 million?
Someone else is going to. So if they deserve it, you have to do it to keep it going. That's why I'm saying if they can win in the next couple of years when they're still not paying,
they don't have to worry about paying
money,
these guys, right?
They don't have to worry about paying.
Then John can get off the hook, move the team to Nashville
or whatever. Right? Geez, I hope that doesn't happen.
I mean, in all sincerity, you and I sort of cut up before we sat down. I want you to give your career path a little bit because, like, you've really been in on the journalism side from the very beginning. You came to me honestly as a guy who had never heard of me or, whatever, who sent a resume to Steve Hennessy, who was running WNSD with me at the time. And you brought an interesting eye to our company because you did come from the journalism side when you were dealing with Kevin Byrne, and you're going to see John Maroon, who's going to be here in a little while.
So John's,
you and John might sit in and do a little radio together. What media looked like 25 years ago this week and what we look like, and forget the internet was web pages and GeoCities and you've got mail, all CompuServe and dial up modem and just how sports has evolved and changed, how the internet's evolved and changed, how media's evolved and changed, and how a kid from Dundalk, 25, I go back and read all of this with my dream to have the radio station for the Orioles and the Ravens who hadn't won anything yet, and to think that they've thrown me out and that I'm the bad guy for cheering for them for 25 years, I think it's a fascinating. You come from a different point of view. I didn't grow up with you in Dundalk.
Right.
You work for me. People think that I don't get along with all of my ex-employees. The ones who don't get along with me, I don't get along with. But like people that have worked in my place and know my dream and met me at 28, don't have any Baltimore Sun experience, Hammer Jacks. I mean, I have all that going on. Everybody that was on the show yesterday has known me since I was a teenager. And there's a whole different level of what their appreciation is for whatever we've done, but you came in and left and then went to work for the man, right? I mean, you went and worked at Comcast, you did Redskins, Ravens, you launched a website. Like, you did all of this stuff after you left me that I'm really, people see Rob Long or they see Jeremy Kahn or they see Bob Haney, they see people that worked with me. You were a guy that did it behind the scenes when you left me at a high level. You worked for Steve Jeppy. I mean, the relationships we had and the work we did together, your career went a different path. I was always proud to see you doing that work.
Yeah, so when I had first come down here, my girlfriend Mona, who now is my wife of 20 years, she came down here to work, and I said I got to find a way to get to Baltimore. So
Baltimore was attractive to you at that time,
right? So I'm driving around, I'm flipping through the radio dial, and I was working at a TV station up at Syracuse, but radio was my first love. So I said I got to find a radio job down there if it's possible, because you really can't in radio. You can't pick where you go, Radio is a very transient business. Whether you're a DJ, a sportscaster, it doesn't really matter. You go where the job is.
And well, there's X amount of jobs. Right. It was a limited. Yep. It still is. I mean, it's an FCC license, you know.
Right. So there's. I mean, I had feelers out in Cincinnati, Los Angeles, Charlotte, you name it, a bunch of different places, you know, to work at. You know, these brand new all sports stations that were popping up everywhere.
And I've been
much.
Sharing those links, right. you know, out on social media because I'm trying to put people's mind into what we found when we found this right. and what the odds, how the odds were stacked against us and all the critics were, they'll never make it. It's AM radio. They don't have a relationship with the Ravens and the Orioles that are going to pay them $10 right. million dollars a year.
I'm not sure that mattered as much back then, you know, and, you know,
it mattered to Jeff Beauchamp when the story came out
true.
That, like, he had the Orioles and we didn't, and therefore we would never survive, like,
right.
literally.
Right. Well, I mean, you don't have the internet to compete. Radio and TV and newspaper ruled the day back then. And like I said, I'm down here flipping through the radio dial. I get up to 1570 a.m., hear this guy Nestor talking.
How long were you on the air at that point?
I feel well, like you started there, August, and it was October when I was down here and helping her move.
Okay, so we were 8 weeks. We were really looking for help at that time.
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
fair enough. Right.
And so I got contact information from the station. Funny enough, the station was over on Hart Road, which was really just right around the corner. And
I remember Steve's like,
apartment.
I got a guy from Syracuse.
Yep. So I sent him a cassette tape, and on the cassette tape it had my phone number, which is a toll-free number, 1-888-HEY-ANDY. So I
That's
had that to
That
to
was
call
your
me
marketing.
Back. That
I
was
remember
my,
Steve
yeah.
told me, this guy's sharp.
Yeah, yeah.
And at that time, I had nasty newsletters.
You
right?
did.
Yeah.
You did. So I also could bring production equipment and do commercials. That was the main thing. Because you guys really, you wanted
this
to have.
This man sat in a closet. yeah. You literally.
Well, you had to. You had
did production
you had a soundproof
in a closet.
Yep.
When I think of you sort of like my wife when she's working and I bother you. You'd have your headset on. You turn around. And you're such a nice guy. You're such a nice person. You couldn't. Be an asshole, you know, but you'd look at me like, dude, I'm trying to edit. You were always like, you always had earplugs in.
Yeah, well.
And Luke gives me that now, like after a game. Well, I'm not really a reporter anymore, but for 15 years, Luke and I would sit after games and he'd be like editing the sound and I'd be bothering him. And he'd give me that stink eye like, dude, I'm editing. I would be the same guy. If you came in and bothered me when I'm editing, I drop my wife does right, it. Well, I drop the headset. I'm like, all right, what do you want? What do you want? Can't you see? I'm working.
Oh,
you
yeah.
are a worker, dude.
Yeah. So I just want to let everybody know. Nestor would come in. Okay, Nestor, we need you to voice this spot, and it's Friday at 4:30 because Hennessy would always, for some reason, he'd be out selling all week. He'd show up at 4:30 on a Friday, and he'd be like, "Here's these 10 commercials we need done, and they
I'm
have to start
bag
running."
On Hennessy, man,
no, I mean we needed the commercial money. No problem.
Steve and I are not friends or you know related in any way, but I am. Eternally grateful.
Eternally grateful. He did great stuff.
For Steve being a part of my life at that point and helping us create something that 25 years later is still here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like literally, you guys, all of you, I'm grateful. I really am.
But Nestor would fly in the studio, come running in, and I'd say, okay, I need you to voice these two. And he would just, like a whirlwind, you got some place to go. I got to do this.
I'm a one spot.
And Well, so
you know that.
Not all the time, though, because sometimes I was like, what am I going to do with this now? So sometimes I'd have to, like, you know, you're out of there.
Every time
I have to tag the commercial
up,
myself
go,
or something.
Oh, you know, you'd have to edit all that out.
Yeah, yeah, little extra
and sometimes
work there.
I would leave it in the mic. I'm right. like, Andy, this sucks. You know, like, yeah. And
oh, man.
So if we found the old Raw tapes. You know, I have all the tapes from our era.
Yep, yep.
You were there when we went to Minidisc briefly, or
yeah,
was that
yeah.
Ray Bachman?
Yeah, no, I was the Minidisc guy.
I see the handwriting,
yep.
And thank God for you. Ray Bachman, they're paging me at Drug City. Nestor to Pharmacy, Big Boy Milkshake coming up. We're at the tasting room at Drug City, by the way. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Andy Mueller is my guest. I think of you as our first producer, but I don't think of you and Ray. Like, you overlapped in a big, big way,
right.
But I see your handwriting on all the tapes. So, you know, I know Hennessy's handwriting, your handwriting, Ray, are on almost everything. And I'm really, you and Ray specifically were really detail oriented in the way, like our Atlanta Super Bowl, it's easy for me to find Steve DeBerg because his name's on the tape. So's Tom Jackson. So, and these were all guests that we had in Atlanta.
We had all kinds of them. Yeah. Yeah.
When the Ray Lewis thing went down, you were with me, right?
Yeah.
But all these years later, I have all of this tape, all of these memories. I really do want to get to you being in the media and how much it's changed for what my vision was, what our vision was, and what sports has become to treat the media like trash. You know what I mean? Like, it is, it's not a good gig for Luke right now to be out there and having managers and coaches threaten to be throwing them out because they've thrown me out, right? Like, the way sports operates, I mean, even ESPN, right? Like, all the Comcast Sportsnets, all the Massons, Sinclair lost $75 million on RSNs. They're trying to figure their business out from a media perspective, but it doesn't include, like, the community or the media. It only includes their house media, literally.
Yeah. I mean, internet and streaming, you really changed the world, and no one knew at first how, you know, because, you know, we go back to 1999, early 99, I started the station. You know, we'd read the paper in the morning. We'd watch the game the night before. We'd flip on the mics. We'd do a show. We'd have the callers call in, giving their take on different things. You know, there's no social media at the time. You really didn't go on the internet for breaking news. I mean, it was there, but it wasn't to the degree
it is
now.
Well, the Baltimore Sun wasn't trying to get you to their website.
Right.
They were trying to get you to buy their newspaper. So if they had a scoop at 8 o'clock at night, they weren't putting it on the internet. They were putting it in the newspaper.
No, but
like, you know what I mean, right? I mean,
yeah.
And radio, during our era, radio was the middle ground. That when Johnny Unitas dies in the middle of the day,
right.
We were the ones. Channel 11 wasn't going to cut off General Hospital, right? WBA radio was the medium for things that happened after the newspaper. Things that happened during the day. I mean, press conferences, right. Things that happened during the day was radio's exclusivity.
I mean, if you think about it, we were able to, and I have a Johnny Unitas thing to tell you, but a fact to tell you about personally with me, actually, funny enough.
All right.
But anyway, we'll get to that. You know, we would take the press conferences, Brian Billick's press conferences, and we would record them and put them on the air.
We considered him the president in our.
But we were able to do that. I mean, there's absolutely no way a radio station's going to do that unless they're going to pony up right now. There's absolutely no way you're going to get a John Harbaugh press conference live on the air, or you're going to be able to even. You know, you can do so many snippets of it and whatnot, but media changed to the point that the teams took over. The internet happened, and the teams took over their own coverage, basically. And they, I'm not saying don't care about the rest of the media covering them, but are very, you know, they realize they can charge for the access. You know, if you want to talk to the coach before everyone else does, you want to be able to, you know, because I never had to worry about that when I was working at your station. So Fridays were Ravens access day where we could go see the players. And I would literally walk in the locker room. Goose would give me something. He'd call me Uncle Fester or something funny like that because I had, you know, the buzz cut or whatever. I go talk to Rob Burnett over at his locker. Goose would make fun of us because he's a Pitt guy and we're Syracuse guys, so we're talking.
You and Rob were.
Oh, yeah.
See, I didn't know. I mean,
yeah. Rob and I were.
I want to hear all
that.
Okay, good.
So it was.
Rob's,
you know,
a good man.
Oh, yeah. And then they would bring in like 50 pizzas and. You know, and the players be eating and, you know, just getting done with practice, you know, and then.
There's Rod Woodson over there.
Oh, yeah.
There's Ray Lewis over there.
Oh, yeah.
There's Shannon Sharp over there.
Yeah, and whoever, you know, we had Scott Mitchell at first was quarterback and, you know, then Stoney Case and whatnot. And then obviously we got Dilfer and Banks and, you know, that whole thing that year.
Did you get on with the Ishmael too? Or
yeah. Oh, yeah. You bet.
Syracuse guy?
Oh, you bet.
I'm just trying to think of the Cuse connections.
Yeah.
Kadri
for sure. Yeah. Definitely. But, you know, just the fact that I didn't necessarily either went to school with them at Syracuse or they were right before me, like Rob was right before me at Syracuse. But yeah, just be able to go to any locker, talk to whoever, get some tape, ask them about the game coming up, ask them how the offense is, the defense is. And then Brian Billick, what was great about him was I would show up to practice Friday. And
everything was great about Brian.
Well, right. So
I mean, he just, you know, I mean, all these years later – Brian was just the greatest.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
Brian was just the greatest. And anybody that doesn't believe that just doesn't know Brian.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with my partnership with him. Or I mean, it does because I spent so much more time with him even after he was deposed. You know what I mean? Like, everybody loves Brian. When you walk in a room with Brian owns the room. And that's not John. I mean, and that's not most NFL. Certainly not Bill Belichick. You know?
Well, he's obviously a very organized and, you know, to the T type guy. And so you'd show up to practice, the practice would end, and Brian needed to, for some reason, walk around the track. Now, maybe he was just clearing his mind, getting a little exercise. He wasn't running. He was walking around the track, and we're talking over where Stevenson is now, the old
bubble.
Ravens
they
complex, the old
there.
Bubble, yeah, and the old Colts place, you know, over there. And so he'd walk around the track. And I would stand there waiting to just to do a quick interview with him, you know, so we could have something to run before the game on the weekend or on Friday afternoon show or whatever like that. And he would walk by me and he would say, three, meaning three more laps. Then he'd walk by, and I stand there. I'm like, well, I mean, he saw, you know, I want to interview him, so I'll wait. Then he walked by me again, two. So, and then after a while, I was like, am I really going to stand here? Am I going to miss out on the players in the locker room? But no, it's the coach, you know, and he's going to talk to me, just him and I, you know, and I'll get something from him that no other station has, some kind of exclusivity, right?
I love the way Andy thinks. Go ahead.
One. And then he stayed one. And then he'd come around. Finally, then
he's sweating.
And he'd walk up to me and
hold on. Take the towel. Yep. Over the shoulder. Always over the shoulder. Take a drink.
And then he'd say, okay.
What you got for me?
Okay. How you doing? How's it going? You know, and then I'd just fire off the questions. He'd answer them all. I'd say, thanks, coach.
You're making me smile because I love Brian.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't been with Brian in a while. I haven't talked to Brian a little bit. I mean, I just haven't bothered. It's been summertime.
Yeah.
I know what he's doing. He's in Minnesota playing golf. He's playing golf every day.
No kidding. Well,
he hated golf.
Makes sense. I mean, all the other coaches play golf. Do you remember the time where we had, when Billick was hired, then he hired his coaching staff, and all these minivans showed up to Hart Road at the radio station, and it was basically the entire coaching staff he brought over, and you had him in studio. So you had Rex Ryan in studio, Donnie Henderson, Marvin Lewis. You know, all the
I remember David
Jack Del Rio
sitting in. I remember Jack Del Rio sitting in. They all did.
No,
like
they
the
all
last
came
hour.
Over. They all came over one day, all of them together in the studio. And
I do not remember.
We just
that.
Packed the studio with all the Ravens assistants. I'm saying you can't do this anymore. This can't happen unless you're going to pay literally millions of dollars to these teams to be able to have something like this. And it just sort of the whole organic nature of it back then was great. You know, because
we were a community station.
Right, right.
I mean, every time you went to the barn, you felt that.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
You feel that in Drug City. Right. Literally.
Definitely. Definitely. And you know, that just, it's missing now. It's missing now. It's
well, they don't have this in Philadelphia or Chicago. They have Odyssey. They have Clear Channel. We have Odyssey here. If you like it, God bless you. But, like, the stock's 10 cents. Buy some of it. But there's no more John Stebmans. There's no more Mike Prestons. There's no more Peter Schmucks coming along. There's no more Ken Rosenthals. There's no more Nasty Nesters.
No more Charlie Eckens.
There's no more Charlie. There's none of that. There's Brett Hollander and Rob Long working for the team. Jason Lockenfora, who used to be a reporter. Rock Kabatko, who was like a journalist, pooping on me in 1998. Then he goes and works for Masson, and he can't criticize ownership. It's over. You know what I mean? If you're reading Ryan Mink and you think that's a journalist, that's not a journalist. That's somebody intimidated by the coach who works for the pleasure of the owner and the general manager. Like, there's only us at this point, right? In a true fashion, and there's no us anymore. There's just me.
And it's not always trying to expose the bad thing the team did or the scandals behind the scenes or anything. It's not always that. There's positive stuff that you could talk about clearly about the team. Obviously, you do still, you know, and
I try
to. You still don't have the access. You don't have the access. And I'm not saying, you know, like you personally not having the access.
The weird part
I'm saying,
for, the, for
I'm
me
saying
is not the
generally
access,
speaking,
it's the accountability.
Right.
For me, it was, if you're going to say that on the radio or write that in a column on the newspaper, or even write that on the internet or drop that on your Twitter, you have to come in the locker room and talk to Odell Beckham, if you know, and write about you don't like the color of his purple hair, or you didn't think he was a good addition, or you didn't believe that Jack Flaherty was going to be the ticket to win. You know, like, you would then have to go to their locker, and they could say to you, why did you say that about me? Or you could do what Rafael Palmeiro did, which was come at me with a bat, like looking to intimidate me. He was never going to hit me with the bat.
Right.
But Davey Johnson had to come out and, you know, like, get between us and, like, fine. I mean, I'll own anything I said on the radio. But the strangest thing of our era, and this probably speaks to Chad Steele and to Rafael Palmeiro, they would, and Hennessy would always say this, they would never really hear what I would say. They would hear what somebody told them that they heard that I said, right?
Well, it's not like you could go back to a podcast and listen to a recording of a YouTube
video. So Chad Steele would come to me and say, I heard you said this about that. And I'd say, I didn't say that. Well, Joe said you did. My wife said you did. This person said you did. But I didn't say that. Well, I think you did. And now, and in the old days, there wasn't a tape. Now anything I say is here. It's transcribed. anything I tweet, even if I'm the NFL quarterback and I tell a fan in Pennsylvania to perform fellatio on me, that I can leave that up there or take that down and there's a screenshot. We're at a whole different level of what I used to think of as accountability, but there's no accountability. I mean, you got a president doing insurrections and getting into, I mean, there's the accountability of things that are said. I mean, this maniac with these poor children and their parents up in New Jersey who gets a whole platform off the Rush Limbaugh tree. I've never been that. We've never been that. Because, you know, 25 years ago, I wouldn't tolerate that. You know, I fired guys for saying stuff like that that 105.7's hired. Because I wasn't going to tolerate racism, any of that nonsense on my airwaves. You had a 7-second delay, man. I had an FCC license. I could not sanction garbage that the guys in Dallas did to me as an FCC owner. Like, I could not sanction trash on my radio. And most of the guys that I fired in the end, not when my wife got sick, but in the beginning, we had a morning show guy here that when I would put the radio on, he would be saying things on the radio that I needed to get him off my radio. I wasn't proud of it. And I worked too hard to have it, right? I once had a weekend show on the air where a young lady who I admire and like and went on to do great things and called me. I was at Yankee Stadium. She called me. She's like, my husband and my boyfriend and I, later became husband, are in the car listening to this host do this Howard Stern screw him or not kind of thing with women in the media. This was going on my airwaves with some jackass intern that I let do a weekend show. And I'm like, you're not going to do a show on my airwaves anymore. Like, if you hear Howard Stern doing that or Don Imus doing that, that doesn't mean that that's going to be what's on my radio station at 1 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon while you hone your skills on my airwaves. Because do you, the biggest thing of when I think about your era and you being a hirer of interns, everyone that walked in just wanted the microphone, right? Like, literally, right? Yeah. Like, everybody just wanted to be a star and yell on the microphone. And that sometimes, and that was the callers too, though, right?
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
Saying wildly inappropriate racist stuff in the middle of Tony Banks and Elvis Gerback and Trent Dilfer, right?
Yep,
like,
yep.
All that went on 23, 24 years ago with a 7-second delay because we were always fighting what went out on the airwaves because of it would make Kevin Byrne call and say, what did you just say about my coach? What did you say? Now there's no more of that. There's not. Whether you said something or different or not, it's on the record more. I think that's something we fought 25 years ago, that I would get a call and you said this about that. And I'm like, that was Spiro. That wasn't even me. And I don't even know what the hell he said because I was in a meeting at 10 o'clock and then we didn't have a tape of it, right?
Right.
So then we had to say, well, what did you say? And I always felt the accountability of that to be a really heavy burden that now everybody's got a Facebook page and they MF me and they, you know, block them and they're angry that I'm, you're an asshole. I don't need you in my life. In the old days, we wanted those people to call and say something. Stupid or intelligent. I don't know.
I just don't think people back then, I mean, even though it was, you know, you could say you're calling from a certain place and tell us your name, I literally, when I'm screening the call, would make sure that the person obviously could put a sentence
together. Screening the call. Say that again.
You had to screen the
call. The call.
You definitely had to screen
the call. There's no screening the internet.
Well, true.
There was no screening the Baltimore Sun's message board. When they're doing all this tawdry stuff, when I got married,
it wasn't anonymous. It was sort of anonymous, but not anonymous to the point of a tweet or a Facebook post or whatever.
Hey, Andy, I want to tell Nestor he sucks.
Right.
Like, well, say it on the air. You would always say, "Tell him on the air."
Yeah.
Don't tell me.
Oh, yeah.
Because they would sit over and bleed you practicing the phone call. Right?
Yeah, and then obviously you have to be on topic. If we're talking about the Orioles, we're not going to just shift gears and immediately take whoever to talk about, you know, Coppin State basketball. You know, when we're talking Coppin State basketball, we'll take your calls on it. But, you know, you have to realize it's, you know, back then it was 1% of your audience are the callers.
Right.
And you want to put good callers on the air. Now, we had great callers. Don't get me wrong.
We had some
great callers.
That's the thing that really deteriorated.
Yeah.
You know, the quality of the phone calls that I was getting in 2001, 2003, the engagement with sports where they knew the rules. They knew the waiver wire. They knew the salary cap, at least in the year. Because I would always say, if you don't understand the salary cap to a host, well, I don't care about the salary cap. Well, then how are you going to do sports radio?
Right.
I mean, I was really a prick about what I wanted on the air. You must admit that. I did not want garbage on my airwaves, and I heard garbage on other airwaves. I heard 1300 was garbage. It was awful. That's why we kicked their ass. That's why I'm still here, because what they put on the radio was terrible. And I still think 105.7 mainly is terrible. Like, when I listen to it, I'm like, this is awful. I wouldn't sanction it. My bar is higher than that, because I wanted to be here 25 years later and be respected and not be thought of as somebody that's putting dirt bags on the radio on the weekends talking bad about local women in the media. I mean, that's not what I was about.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, there's something to be said about, you know, sports talk kind of turned into guy talk and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, we never really
went. And the politics where that went.
Yeah, and we never really went that route, you know, and there's really no reason to completely go that route. I mean, we talk guy stuff, you know.
Locker room talk.
Some beer you want to drink, a cigar you're smoking, you know, that type of stuff. You know, more of like, you know, guys like to do certain things, you know, on weekends or whatever, you know. But it wasn't anything.
Guy talk means that I can say sexist, racist, under the table, make jokes.
Well, it became that maybe.
Right. Well, and we're just doing it, and it's comedy. It's just comedy. It's a racist joke that's comedy, right? Like, we're funny guys. And the gambling part of guy talk from 20 years ago, completely sanctioned now, right?
Like, totally.
I mean, I have Hollywood Casino. You can go up there, bet during the game, before the game. You can bet on this pitch, bet on that pitch. Ben McDonald's in on it. Palmer's queasy about it. I mean, Big Poppy's got a hose, right? Kevin Byrne would have thrown us out of the locker room.
Exactly.
If we were sanctioning points and gambling and who's injured and who's not, and this is why I'm betting on the game this week. Like, all of that was verboten, right? And that's changed dramatically.
Totally has changed. And, you know, that, I mean, there's radio networks or websites clearly that just deal with that end of sports. And I don't have a problem with it. I mean, even back then, if I had a chance to go to Vegas, I could put a few.
Dude, I saw Lock and Four last night on Twitter talking about his insider pick on the Hall of Fame game.
Yeah, see, preseason football, that's like, well, I don't know why you'd waste your time betting on
that. Dude, 1-800-GET-HELP. You know, call. Right. I mean, seriously, I don't know what to say, but the gambling part of this is dangerous. And I tell people that all the time. I don't have that gene, but I had guys that worked with me. It wrecked their lives. It ruled their lives. It was the most important thing in their life, you know?
You're betting English soccer on a Tuesday afternoon, and you know nothing about the Premier League. That would be tough. You know, that's a gambling
problem. Well,
even
if you think
you
know something about it. So, well, I'll leave you with this, and we'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll talk more modern stuff. Andy Mueller's our guest. Andy, if you're an OG, you recognize Andy's. You're a bass, you're not baritone. What do you got going on? Andy, I was thinking of you having the radio voice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, I was your commercial guy, so yeah.
I was your commercial guy.
Could always be, you know. Pick up Coors Light wherever you buy beer and tap the Rockies. You know, I was always
the
tags on the end.
Can I make you the voice of WNST now?
Sure, I could, yeah. I used to be,
though.
Would
you do that?
I used to do the WNST drops and whatnot.
Because what Dave Shinen was on the show 2 weeks ago at Coco's, and he's got music. He's going to gift me his music for beds. So I'm going to use his music as the new music beds.
Oh, very good.
For our 25th anniversary. You see our 25th anniversary logo?
No, I did hear that you were going to have a new logo.
No, we got a brand new logo.
You haven't shown it to anyone yet? Or?
No, it's on the front of the website right
now.
But
I have seen it. Yeah, I have seen
it. It's got the fireworks and stuff. You haven't seen it yet?
No, I have seen that.
Oh,
okay.
yeah. So we have a 25th.
I didn't know if that was just temporary.
Well, I want to do new branding. I feel like we're having a meeting in the old day. Can we go to the basement of the radio station?
Yeah.
I want new branding, Andy, for September 5th for the kickoff of football season. I'll tell you about the 25th anniversary, but I just want to say this on the gambling side. I had Marty McGee and Dick Girardi on Preakness Week.
Oh, yeah.
Could you say that there would be any more decorated horse racing people?
Right. I mean, they're horse players for sure.
I've met
both the guys who they're, you know.
Life are friends of
hung
mine.
Hung out at the track with both of them.
I've known both of them more than 35 years. Like, literally. I've known Dick since 1984. My first byline, and I talked to Bob Nussgart yesterday, News American, my name and Dick Girardi's name are on the sheet. I have a full sheet for my wall right. of my first byline with Teresa Andrews and July of 1984.
What was the subject matter?
Teresa Andrews had won the gold medal in the 1984 Olympics in Los Angeles. How old were you in 84?
11.
11, okay. Yeah. So 1984, I'm 15. I had my first byline, and Dick Girardi's picks and Rich Petro, too, were on the same page. So that's how long I've known Dick. Wow. My first byline, summer 84, 39 years, Marty McGee and I went to the Paul Simon Graceland Tour in 1987 at Merriweather. Yeah. So I've known him that long as well, all right, through the racetrack. I had them both on, and we did our whole, is the Preakness leaving town? You know, what's wrong? The Derby winner's not coming to the we did all that, right?
You've done that, what, 20 years
well,
go, running?
Well, I said to both of them, I said, you guys were on the front end of this whole gambling thing, where you were at the press box at Pimlico, where you could go up and you could bet right there and watch in the press box, right? There was a two betting windows in the
you
press box.
You bet there were, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and how weird that was, right? Like, it's just as a sports fan that baseball and football will never have that. Never.
There's always a line, too, by the way.
Always a line, right?
Yeah.
Bills coming out, forms, looking up at the horses, walking on the track. Clem Florio, oh, you baby doll. Look at him, Andy. He's sweating.
Yep.
He's going to be in the money, Andy. I'm telling you.
And I'm like, what about those front wraps? No, don't worry about that.
Don't worry about the blinkers.
They're just,
the LASIK, it helps them breathe. Nesta, it helps them breathe. So I love those guys. And I wish I could talk to Clem. And Clem would say the same thing. So I said to Marty, you've been betting all your, and Marty's a degenerate gambler. He bets on baseball. He's been betting on everything forever, all his life, right? And I said to Tim, horse racing. Forget baseball, football, things you have. You're a horse racing historian, aficionado. This is all you do. Are you ahead or behind betting on horse? Oh, behind. So then I have Dick on. And Dick, both of these guys have cashed $100,000, you know, things that consortiums they're in on. And like, oh, they're in on all that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I said to Dick, same thing. I've known Dick. He's been betting 60 years, Dick has, right? I mean, Dick was a gambler at the track who then became a reporter from his inside information, right? And I said to him, I'm behind, but way behind. I'm like, so if the two of you have been doing this in horse racing your whole life, every day, and you're behind, how is some jackass on a Sunday going to get ahead by betting on the Falcons?
Well, they're not. I mean, at the end of the day,
I'm just asking.
The thing is, with horse racing, you love the game, and you love the doing the handicap and looking at the past performances, watching the replays. That's what you love about it, and you just want to be right. But sometimes you can be right, but if you spread out too much in the race, you actually don't win any money on the race, even if you have the winner. Like, because say you're betting this one win play show, you're betting a bunch of exotics, you lose the money on the exotics because you don't get second and third, but you got first, but first didn't, you know, so you win $10 or $100 or $1,000 on the first place, the horse coming in first, but then all your exotics, you end up spending $1,000 on the ticket or
something. Well, this is my issue. People start watching baseball.
It's money management.
And they're thinking, I'm going to bet on Gunnar Henderson to hit a home run. It's 8-1 on this, whatever it is, right? Like, it's a different way. Nobody's ever thought of baseball that way.
No,
in our lifetime, and that's why I said baseball is really getting greasy in that way and moving in that direction and seeing that as the next big pile of money. Because the next big pile of money is not Masson. It's not the Sinclair folks buying the Fox Sports Nets and the Comcast Sports Nets and Ted Leones's, owning home team sport. I mean, that's over with. They need to fit, and it's not Steve Bisciotti and Chad Steele need me to buy my seats back in the front row of Section 513 that they threw me out of. That's not where their pile of money is. Their pile of money is not even in local revenue or skyboxes. The big pile of money that they can't touch was what the bookmaker Louis did down at Sabatino's, where he was getting that shave.
In-game betting while you're in the stadium.
Bob Kraft wants that shave now.
Yep.
Roger Goodell wants that shave now. Rob Manfred and John Angelos look at that as the, you know, that's going to be 20% of their revenue 5 years from now. That's how they see it. And 5 years ago, and for the last 100 years, it was no part of their revenue. But in order to do that, they got to get Ben McDonald on the broadcast and Brett Hollander giving his insights and paying Lock and Ford to give his big pick. I don't know what that does when it comes to expertise or being an expert at how to gamble versus what a breaking ball looks like and what a prospect looks. I mean, I got into sports because I love sports. My dad wasn't that way. I mean, you know that about me. We've been at it a long time. I got into it because I loved Baltimore, right? It was my home team. That's same reason you love Syracuse, right? Like, that's the rub. The rub is it says Baltimore on it, and that's mine. And you can't have that in Pittsburgh or New York or Boston. It's kind of gone to some degree. I mean,
it is,
lure of that, the reason people watch sports isn't for my hometown team. It's more tribal, I think, in that way. If you're a Cowboys fan or whatever, that's my team, America's team or whatever. But that's not how they're making money on it anymore. They're not making money on it selling you a Dan Pastorini jersey. They're trying to get you to actively wager on it.
Oh, yeah. And I still double take. I'm watching an NFL broadcast and they're mentioning, you know, some
Terry Bradshaw's giving his picks.
Yeah, and it's just odd to me. It's still odd. I'm still not used to it. Still not used to it. You know, we had Jimmy the Greek in the 80s doing his thing here and there, but
intangibles. Brent, Brent, let me tell you. Irv, let me tell you, the intangibles the Eagles have here.
That's right.
I got some inside information when I was in New York.
Yeah, it was
inside information.
It was always
Jim
like
Faust,
the former broadcaster or the Paul Hornung former player that would like be in one of those ads in the back of the football magazine.
I did a show with Lawrence Taylor and Buddy Ryan.
Like they're disgraced
era.
Back then, and now it's all
Kevin
yeah,
Byrne
that's right.
Like
you did that
Kevin
show.
Kevin Byrne didn't like that.
Right.
Kevin Byrne didn't like that.
No, I understand, but now they'd love it that you were doing a show like that. With you know, of course, if you know, if you could get LT back to do a show, that would
I'll be making my picks. Luke and I are going to make picks this year.
Yeah,
on behalf
not?
Of Hollywood Casino. So
everyone, the problem is everyone makes picks now. So it's just,
but
it used
mine
to
will
be so
better.
Special.
Call my 900 we'll number. You got any? We're Drug City. You can go down and get some greasy stuff from my hair. You
there
know what
go.
I mean?
There
I could
go.
Grow one of those little Dean Kramer mustaches. Get that going on. Let my hair down. By the way, you like my long hair?
Yeah. It's I'm not used to seeing you this way, but. But
when Maroon comes,
obviously
I'll let
you've
my
had
hair
this
out.
For a while. Yeah.
Well, let's take a break. Andy Mueller's here. I promised I wasn't going to go super long, but when I have my friends on, right? I mean, I miss you, man.
Yeah, we haven't seen
I
each other
make
person
you the voice
in
of WNSD.
A long, long time.
Raskin Global gave me this this crab mallet. I did not use it. I forgot it yesterday. I forgot my Window Nation hat yesterday, so apologies to those folks. 866-90-NATION all summer long. The one-year anniversary of my windows is August 8th. It was a good day. I mean, our windows were a mess. We have great windows now. Window Nation, a part of that. And our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Andy is going to get you have number 21. There you go, 21.
All right.
Yeah. You know Art Modell's favorite joke? How do you feel today, Art? And Art would say, I feel like an 18-year-old. Oh, great. But where are you going to find one at this hour? So there's your... that's always... That's got to be like
$10,000 maybe.
Shecky Green joke
right.
Or, you know, like a Henny...
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
50s.
Yeah, totally.
Red Skeleton. Yeah. I don't know. Red Button, something like that.
Right. Red Button.
I met Red Buttons or Skeleton at Art Modell's 80th birthday party.
Oh, wow.
At the Harbor Court.
Wow.
Whichever one was alive at that time.
I met Wink Martindale at a Steve Jeppy party, but that's a
did you
that's
really?
Another story. Yeah. Yeah, he's I think he's still with us, right? In his 90s.
Wink's coaching defense with the
Chuck? No, not, oh, that, not Wink. That Wink. Yeah, not that Wink.
Andy Mueller's here. I love Andy, and I love having Andy on. We're at Drug City doing our 25th anniversary, telling old stories. We're going to talk a little more current stuff, and we talk some media in this thing. John Maroon's going to join us. Rodney from Dangerously Delicious Pies, which they serve here at Drug City, going to be joining us today. My old friend Bill Yerman's coming by. Baltimore County Executive Johnny O will be here. And we just had a lovely day of storytelling at Costas. Costas is a mile down the road. Andy, you can go get some crab imperial, take it home to your wife. You can get a crab cake right here at the Fountain of Drug City, which I'm going to do later on. They brought me a turkey Reuben up here as well. I'm going to get a big boy milkshake. He's threatening to make me a peach milkshake down here that's better than that right wing fast food peach milkshake that I love so much, by the way, along with the chicken and the waffle fries. We're Drug City. We're doing it. 25 years into this. Hope you stay with us. Back for more with Andy here at Drug City. We're at the tasting room above the fountain. Stay with us.